And you may want to open your psalm books to 150, because I'm going to talk about that song tonight. So you can keep that open, keep your Bible open. If you take notes, I don't know what you're going to do. Maybe you can work something out with your neighbor. What do you think of the words we sing? 1 Corinthians 14 teaches what makes our worship vital. For our worship to have meaning, we must know what we are doing. We must believe what we are doing. Therefore, Paul wrote in verse 15, what is the conclusion then? I will pray with the Spirit, and I will also pray with the understanding. And especially for us tonight, I will sing with the Spirit, and I will also sing with the understanding. To help us fulfill this verse, I want to look at song number 150 tonight, which is called Follow Me. And in fact, I've already done this a couple times since I've been here, just taking a song that we just go through it and make sure that we're singing that song with the Spirit and with the understanding. Because we're singing it to God and we're singing it to one another. And Lord willing, I want to continue to do this with various songs in the future. I believe that the writer of this song knew how we view our lives as Christians and how we expect God to view our lives. But then he took all that and counters it with what the Lord teaches us. What the Lord teaches us about following him. Look at the first verse where we're talking about, or where we will sing about, the burdens of life. Look at our complaints. I traveled down a lonely road, and no one seemed to care. We feel sorry for ourselves sometimes for what we have to endure. We think that we're going it alone, believing that no other members of the church are going through the same thing, or that no one else wants to help us. We have Elijah syndrome at times. Do you remember when in 1 Kings chapter 18, Elijah was confronted by the Lord, and he expressed almost exactly what the first several words of this song say. In verse 22, he said to the people, I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450. Now that's what he said to the people. But then as you move into chapter 19, you'll find that he says the same thing to God. When God finds Elijah in a certain place, you know, what are you doing here, Elijah? Well, here's what he says in verse 10. He said, I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts. For the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. And then down in verse 14, he says the same thing to God again, when God again asks him, what are you doing here? And these words of Elijah that I've now given you three passages for are so significant that Paul quotes them in Romans chapter 11 and verse 3. I'm the only one. I'm the only one who has these struggles. And I'm the only one who's doing all this work for the Lord. Going back to the Old Testament, in Psalm 142, verse 4, listen to how the psalmist speaks to God. He says, look on my right hand and see. For there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul. It's easy to get into that rut of thinking that way, isn't it? And the writer of our song that we're reviewing, I think probably he not only had that experience, but he knows how we all go through that from time to time. So going back to the song, that verse continues. The burden on my weary back had bowed me to despair. We have it so hard, don't we? We have it so bad. There are times when we're convinced we just can't take it anymore, and we convince ourselves that the Lord cannot expect me, and I know that He doesn't expect me, to take it anymore. And so we have an imaginary conversation with Him. That's what the song does next. I oft complained to Jesus how folks were treating me. I mean, people do treat us badly, don't they? On the road, in the store, in their businesses, in our businesses, at school, in the neighborhood, sometimes in the family, and so on. But then we continue to sing the song and listen to what Jesus says in reply. And then I heard Him say, so tenderly, my feet were also weary upon the Calvary Road. It's almost as though the Lord is saying, you want to talk about weariness? Just listen to me. And of course, the writer of the song reminds us that Jesus is saying this tenderly to us. He does not come across in an angry way in the New Testament, does He? He hears our complaints. He sees how we look at life. But then He just speaks to us tenderly. Imagine carrying a large piece of wood after having been beaten, after having been scourged, after having all your friends forsake you, and then to be knowing that you're on the way to your execution. All of a sudden, we start to get humbled, don't we? So Jesus continues in the psalm, the cross became so heavy, I fell beneath the load. As you know, He could not carry the cross anymore, and evidently the Romans compelled a man by the name of Simon from Northern Africa, to carry the cross for Jesus the rest of the way. Now think about this. Jesus created the world with the power of His Word, and He couldn't even carry a wooden cross at this point. And that's because, as you know, He took on human form. And the human body can only do so much. Here He is enduring all this pain, enduring all this hate, all this bad situation in life, and He finally falls beneath the load. And then He says to us, as the song says, and I think as the New Testament affirms, be faithful, weary pilgrim. The morning I can see. Jesus made it. So you be faithful. Be patient. Endure to the end. Because the morning is in sight. Meaning, there's a new day coming. When we won't have to carry these burdens anymore. Now notice that He does not say, I'm going to take away all your burdens. We're still going to have burdens in this life as Christians. But He'll help us carry them. And so the song says, just lift your cross and follow close to me. In the Scriptures, as well as in this song, Jesus never tells us to put down our crosses. So we still have a burden. And sometimes it's still going to require suffering. He just says, now take your cross, keep carrying it, and get close to me. Get right here. Don't be way off in the distance. Stay here with me. Let's get close together. I love Revelation 14 because it follows Revelation 13. And what I mean by that is I hear so many people who are distressed about the mark of the beast. That's a Revelation 13 song, the mark of the beast. There have been so many people over the years who have had a question, what is the mark of the beast? And people have been terrified by the mark of the beast. And I always want to tell them, you know, when you read the scriptures, with the exception of the book of Psalms, just read it as though the chapter divisions are not there. Because Revelation 14 talks to us about the mark of God. Why can't we get thrilled about the mark of God instead of being terrified by the mark of the beast? Who are those people who have the mark of God? Well, I'm going to start at verse 1, and I'll take you down to verse 4, but in verse 4, he will tell you who those people are who receive the mark of God on their foreheads. And it has to do with the song and the part of the song that I've just read to you. Revelation 14, 1 through 4. Then I looked, and behold, a lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his Father's name written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, like the voice of many waters, and like the voice of loud thunder. And I heard the sound of harpists playing their harps. They sang, as it were, a new song before the throne, before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one could learn that song except the 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. Now, who are they? He's going to tell you who they are in verse 4. These are the ones who are not defiled with women, for they are virgins. Now, here's the sentence I want you to notice. These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever He goes. These were redeemed from among men, being first fruits to God and to the Lamb. When you sing this song then, song number 150 in our books, and we come to the end of verse 1, and Jesus says, just, you know, take up your cross and follow close to me. Remember Revelation 14:4. Because if you do what it says, if you do what we're going to sing to each other a little bit later, look where you're going to end up. You don't have to worry about some mark of the beast. You can delight in the fact that your Father's name is written on your forehead. Follow close to Him. Get as close to Him as you can. The second verse of the song now. It now talks about the work we do for the Lord. And it's said in a boastful way. I work so hard for Jesus, I often boast and say, look at all the things I've done for Him. Look at me, Lord. Look at everything I've done for you. Would you care for me to list them all for you? The song continues, I've sacrificed a lot of things to walk the narrow way. We want Him to know we have what we have given up for Him, as though He doesn't know, or as though He's forgotten. But we also want others to know. Dear God, look at the sacrifices I've made for you. In fact, brothers and sisters, look what I've sacrificed for Him. I'm really something, aren't I? The song again continues, I gave up fame and fortune. I'm worth a lot to Thee. Now, I could have had a better life, God, because I'm so talented, but Lord, I gave it up for You. There's some promotions that I was skipped over because of my strong stance for righteousness. Aren't you glad that you have me in the kingdom? Are you not impressed, Lord? I mean, how many people do you have like me in the church? Well, here comes Jesus speaking back to us in this imaginary conversation with the Lord. The song continues, and then I hear Him gently say to me, I left the throne of glory and counted it but loss. As you know, he who is rich became poor for our sakes. You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, Yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might become rich. As Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 8, verse 9. To say that he was rich, somehow that there's just not enough in that word, is there? He left the throne of glory and counted it but loss. And what did he then go through after that? Well, look at the psalm. He says, my hands were nailed in anger upon a cruel cross. We speak of our suffering. We speak of what we sacrifice. Have any of us gone from a throne to allowing our angry subjects drive nails through our hands? Of course not. He's the only one who's done that. What he has given up and the extent of his suffering, the song is seeking to get us to see, is far beyond anything we may think that we're suffering for his sake. But he says to us in the song, but now we'll make the journey with your hand safe in mine. And is that not what you find in the New Testament? That Jesus is saying, look, we'll take this journey together. He's not trying to separate himself from us. Just put your hand safe in mine. And we'll make it together. Indeed, Jesus bears gently with us, in spite of our claims to a miserable life. And so the end of that verse now in the song says, so lift your cross and follow close to me. Just put your hand in his, take up your cross, and follow him. Now, verse 3 speaks about the greater works versus the smaller works. And boy, are we ready. We're ready to do some good work if we're called upon to do it. So that verse begins, oh Jesus, if I die upon a foreign field someday. Now we may dream of a great work that we're going to do, and if necessary, we'll make that great sacrifice. If the opportunity ever comes, oh yes, we'll be ready. For as the song goes on to say, 'twould be no more than love demands, no less could I repay. I am ready, Lord, to demonstrate my great love for you. If there's ever an opportunity. And then, look how the song even quotes from Jesus. No greater love hath mortal man than for a friend to die. And is that not what Jesus taught in John 15:13? Lord, I've read that passage. I know it. It's in my heart. And I'm ready, if I ever have to go to a foreign field, or if there's ever some great sacrifice that I need to make here, I remember what you said in John 15 to the apostles on the night in which you were betrayed. Oh yes, I remember that. Greater love has no man than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. But then the song continues with the reply of Jesus. These are the words he gently spoke to me. If just a cup of water I place within your hand, then just a cup of water is all that I demand. You see, sometimes we promise that we'll do this great work. And sometimes I wonder if we convince ourselves of that so we can avoid doing the smaller daily works that no one ever sees. I'm sure you've read 1 Corinthians 13, that great and powerful and poetic chapter on love. And I think it shows that God knows how we think. And therefore, he shows that love is doing the small, everyday, unnoticed things. Remember verses 1 through 3? Paul said, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I can remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Now, how often are we called upon to give our bodies to be burned? How often are we called upon to sell everything we have and give to someone in need? I mean, those things are very rare, are they not? I was going to say they're once-in-a-lifetime type of things, but for most of us, they don't even happen in a lifetime. So then what Paul does in verses 4 through 7, if you look at it carefully, he's not talking about those rare once-in-a-lifetime sacrifices we may make in the name of love. But rather, it's the small, everyday expressions of our attitude. Whether we can be patient and long-suffering. Whether we can bear all things and hope all things and so forth. 1 John 3 presents the great work of love. But if we don't have the smaller works, then we don't have God's works living within us. I think it's interesting that 1 John 3:16 sounds a lot like John 3:16. But John 3:16 just talks about what the Lord did. 1 John 3:16 and 17 speak about us doing the same thing on the magnitude that Jesus did as far as giving our lives, but on the other hand, we're not called upon to do that very often. He then talks about those smaller daily things again. Look at what John says there. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us. And we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But, verse 17 starts, whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? Verse 18 also, my little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. Yes, let's lay our lives down for the brethren just like Jesus did for us. But on the other hand, if my brother or sister needs something now, it might be a material need, maybe it's just my compassion, maybe it's just my ear, who knows what it is. John says, if I can't give that, then something's wrong. So, finally in this song, back to song 150, Follow Me. The end of the song now has our final resolution. Notice how it now is worded. But if by death to living they can thy glory see. In other words, in whatever way, Lord, the world can see the glory of Christ rather than my own, I'm finally ready to do it. Did you notice how the first part of every verse of this song was representing us glorifying ourselves? And how that sometimes even our attempts to appear humble are nothing more than veiled attempts at self-glory. I am so humble. Brother Don Sullivan, one of my teachers in preaching school, we would make fun of the idea of someone boasting of their humility. And that sounds so self-contradictory, doesn't it? And we would talk about writing a book, Humility, and how I achieved it. And it just sounds so comical to us. I am so humble. Let me tell you how I went about achieving it. And somehow that doesn't sound right, does it? Well, that's what the first part of every verse of this song was doing. I mean, if I am constantly speaking about myself, even in what we might call a humble way, am I not detracting from the glory of the Lord? When people are done with their conversation with me, they're going to walk away thinking about me instead of the Lord. I heard a man teach a class one time, and it was on 1 John. I can remember that much. But he felt so inadequate, and I really think he was sincere and honest. But he constantly made references to that he wished that the preacher would be teaching the class, or someone else. And he just kept on doing this. Every single class he would do this. And as I sat there these many years ago, I thought to myself, brother, just teach me what 1 John says. I understand how you feel so inadequate, but when I get done with class, I always think about how inadequate you were. And I don't want to think about how inadequate you were. I want to think about how adequate Jesus is to deal with me. Granted, you know, in our conversations with people, we're going to talk about ourselves. That just is going to come up. I mean, look at the Bible. You'll see prophets and apostles and so forth speaking of themselves, but what's the emphasis of their conversation? You walk away ultimately thinking about God or something about Him. So, the song ends, I'll take my cross and follow close to Thee. That's what you've been trying to tell me this whole time, Lord. This whole time, you've been trying to pound it into me in a very soft, gentle, and tender way, and I finally got it. I finally see your point. I've heard you say it so many times. It took a while. I'm pretty stubborn, but I finally got it. So whatever way you're glorified, I'll follow close to you. I'll do it. Now would you please turn to the Gospel according to Mark, chapter 8. And I want to end tonight with looking at verses 34 through 38, which I believe this song, as well as all my comments tonight, are based upon what Jesus does and says here in Mark 8, 34 through 38. It begins by saying, when He had called the people to Himself with His disciples also, now before we go into seeing what He said, please notice that this teaching of Jesus is not restricted to apostles and preachers. This is for all the people that we're about to read here. See that in verse 34? He called all the people to Himself along with His disciples. They're certainly not excluded. And He said to them, whoever desires to come to Me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow Me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for My sake and the Gospel's will save it. The invitation is open to everyone. He invites everyone. However, if we are going to do it, we have to do it on His terms. Just like, you know, if someone volunteers to play, let's say, professional football, or you volunteer to join the army, it's true, you volunteered. You didn't have to go. But once you're in, you don't say, well, I only want to fight a war Monday through Saturday. And I need to have at least an hour lunch break. I need to have this and that, and I'll fight under these conditions. No, you have to go in and submit yourself fully to the way it's going to be. The way the one in authority says, this is how we're going to run this army. And in the same way, that happens with the Lord. I have to be willing to lose my life for His sake. Now, am I going to lose when that happens? Verse 36. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? With the cost involved, we may wonder if it's worth it. I mean, He's asking me to give up myself. Is it worth it? I think that's why a lot of people, and I respect them at least for that much, they realize, okay, if I become a Christian, I've got to be willing to give up my life for Him. And I'm not ready to do that. And I don't want to be a hypocrite, so I'm going to wait. And that's fine. Hopefully they'll turn around before it's too late. But, you know, there's like, speaking about the army again, there's people who go into the army, and they have to be willing to die. Is it worth it? There are people who protect us here in our city, police officers. They have to be willing to die for us. Is it worth it to them? Parents are willing to give up anything necessary for the life of their children. My mother gave me a kidney. And I think every single parent that I've ever known, maybe with a few exceptions, would be willing to do the same thing. What do they get out of it? Is it worth it? Sure, I think it is in all three of those illustrations I used. But what about in the kingdom of Christ? It's greater than any earthly army. It is greater than our family. It's greater than serving your local citizens on the police force. Yes, it's definitely worth it. For Jesus now says in verse 38, "For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him the Son of Man also will be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." The price of rejection is high, but the reward for acceptance is also incredibly high. From everything we read in the Scriptures, it is beyond our imagination what must be coming. And right now, we want to invite you, when we sing this song now, we want you to think about the words. And if you find that you've not been following the Lord as you should have been following Him, please come forward, brother or sister, and let us pray for you. And may you rededicate your life to serving Him. Please come now as we stand and